giggling. "Remember me, Toby's sister?"
"Yeah, of course," I said, even though I doubted I would have recognized her in the hallway. She looked like so many other freshman girls, skinny and brunette, with a pink hoodie and matching braces. And then I realized I'd completely forgotten her name. I stalled, stirring the sugar into my coffee, and then I felt a tap on my shoulder.
"Good morning," Cassidy said brightly. "What kind of high school has its own coffee cart?"
"Beverage cart," I said. "We had a coffee rebellion last year. Before that, it was just hot chocolate." I started to introduce Cassidy to Toby's sister, mostly out of politeness, and hesitated, wishing I could remember the girl's name.
"Emily,"
Toby's sister supplied. "Right, Emily," I said sheepishly, committing it to memory. The passing bell rang, and both freshmen looked panicked, as though the world would collapse if they didn't head to class that very second. To be a ninth grader.
"Shouldn't you two get to class?" I asked, gently teasing them.
"Don't want to be late." They scrambled away as though I'd given orders. I could hear them giggling as they walked, their shoulders pressed together.
"Don't want to be late,"
Cassidy echoed with a smirk. She had ditched the oversized boy shirt in favor of a plaid dress that must have been an antique. It was tight in all the right places, though, and Butch Cassidy she was not. I threw away my empty sugar packet and headed toward the speech and debate classroom.
"It's called a tardle," Cassidy said, following me, "in case you were wondering."
"Oh, what's called a tardle?"
"That pause in conversation when you're about to introduce someone but you've forgotten their name. There's a word for it. In Scotland, it's called a tardle."
"Fascinating," I said sourly. Actually, it was interesting, but I was still upset with her over what had happened in Spanish class.
"Wait," Cassidy persisted. "About what I said yesterday, I didn't know. God, you must hate me. Go ahead. I give you permission to aim an invisible crossbow at my heart."
She stopped walking and stood there a moment, her eyes squeezed shut, as though expecting me to play along. When I didn't, she frowned and caught up with me once more.
"It's not like I was asking around or anything," she continued. "The whole school's talking about you, and we're going to be late, by the way, if we don't hurry."
"You're the one walking with me," I pointed out. She bit her lip, and I could tell that she'd made a pretty educated guess as to why I hadn't wanted to walk her to English the day before. This strange, silent moment of understanding passed between us.
"What's your fourth period?" I asked, filling the silence.
"Speech and debate."
Her lip curled, as though she'd gotten stuck with the class like I had.
"Me too. Listen, you should go ahead."
"And let you take that invisible crossbow and aim it at my back?" she scoffed. "Don't be ridiculous."
And so we were late together.
"Faulkner!"
Toby boomed. He was sitting on top of the teacher's desk and wearing another shocker of a bow tie. Class hadn't started, and hardly anyone was in their seats. Through the little window built into the door, I could see Ms. Wang in the annex, in conversation with the journalism teacher. Toby slid off the desk and practically choked when he saw Cassidy.
"What are you doing here?"
he spluttered.
"You two know each other?"
I frowned, glancing back and forth between them. Cassidy looked horrified, and I couldn't read Toby's expression at all.
"Cassidy's, well..."
Toby seemed to change his mind mid-explanation.
"She's a fencer."
For some reason, this made Cassidy uncomfortable.
"What, like swords?" I asked.
"He means a picket fencer,"
Cassidy clarified, grimacing as though the subject was painful.
"It's just this term from debate. It's not important."
"Like hell it's not," Toby retorted. "I can't believe you transferred to Eastwood. You transferred here, right? Because seriously, this is epic. Everyone's going to freak out."
Cassidy shrugged, clearly not wanting to talk about it. We took a table together in the back, and after a few minutes, Ms. Wang came in and passed out a course description. She was young, barely out of grad school, the sort of teacher who would constantly lose control of the class and quietly panic until the teacher next door came in and yelled. She talked about the different types of debate, and then made Toby get up and sell us on joining the debate team. He sauntered to the front of the classroom, buttoned his blazer, and grinned.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he began, "I presume that we all share an interest in booze, mischief, and co-ed sleepovers."
The color drained from Ms. Wang's face.
"I'm speaking, of course, about getting into college, where one has the option to engage in those sorts of illicit activities after achieving academic excellence, naturally."
Toby quickly amended.
"And joining the debate team makes an excellent resume stuffer for those college applications."
Toby continued talking about the debate team, the time commitment, and the school's past record.
"We're even worse than the golf team."
He was a decent public speaker, and for a moment I wondered why he'd never gone out for student government. And then I remembered the severed head. Afterward, Toby sent around a sign-up sheet for the first debate tournament of the year, which no one signed. When the sheet got to Cassidy, her shoulders shook with silent laughter. She slid the piece of paper onto my desk. Written at the top of the list, in obnoxiously hot pink Sharpie, was this beauty. "Ezra Mother Effing Faulkner. Yo, you owe me for the Gatorade piss." I couldn't help it. I burst out laughing. The room went deadly silent, and Toby grinned like he'd just won the ping-pong world championship. Ms. Wang frowned at me. I quickly turned my laughter into a fake coughing fit, and Cassidy leaned over and helpfully whacked me on the back. To my deepest shame, this made me actually start coughing in earnest. By the time I got it under control, it had sort of become an event.
"Sorry," Cassidy whispered.
I shrugged like it didn't matter, but when she wasn't looking, I scribbled her name onto the sign-up sheet in payback and then passed it forward. For the remainder of class, we worked in pairs, structuring a parliamentary debate. Cassidy and I partnered together. "What's a picket fencer?" I pressed, when she made no move to start the assignment.
It's when you place first in every round at a tournament."
She sighed, fiddling with her still-capped pen.
"Your cumulative's a row of ones, like a little picket fence."
I considered this, the idea not just of winning, but doing so without a single defeat, as Toby wandered over and pulled up a chair.
"Yeah, hi," he said. "In case you are wondering, you're not going to have to turn that in."
"You're sure?" I asked.
"I swear it on the grave of my sweet dead hamster Petunia," he said,
which wasn't exactly reassuring since, to my knowledge, Toby had never owned a hamster.
"Ms. Wang asked me to come up with a random topic during break as an exercise. Technically, I'm not in this class. I'm her student aide."
"So you're her wingman?" Cassidy asked.
The three of us laughed, and it struck me that Cassidy and Toby knew each other, that if anyone was an outsider, it wasn't the new girl, it was me. Then the bell rang, Ms. Wang told us to hold on to our debates, and Toby mouthed,
"Told you so."
The classroom began to clear out, and I watched Cassidy fasten the buckles on her satchel. Her hair was half pinned up into this crown of braids, and with the sharp planes of her cheekbones and her pale skin, she looked as though she had stepped out of a different era, one where people bought war bonds and decamped to the countryside to avoid air raids. I'd never seen anyone like her, and I couldn't help but stare.
"Come on,"
Toby said, and Cassidy glanced up, nearly catching me staring.
"Join me for lunch. You're coming too, Faulkner. I could use a new sidekick."
"Actually, I'm going to Chipotle," I said, "with Evan and Jimmy and them." But it sounded ridiculous, and even as I said it, I knew I wasn't really going.
"Sure you are," Toby laughed. "I'm not taking no for an answer. Now let's go, for my harem does not eat before I have graced them with my magnificence."
7. The moment I entered the quad, I realized I'd made a grand miscalculation. Jimmy and Evan hadn't gone to Chipotle after all. All of my old friends had stayed on campus. I could see them there, at the choice table near the wall that divided the upper and lower quads. The water polo and tennis guys were squished around the too small table, balancing girlfriends on their laps. Charlotte's song squad crowd sat on the wall, drinking Diet Cokes and swinging their bare legs. It wasn't quite the same crew as last year, but the composition didn't matter. It was still that table, the one where the laughter carried across the quad, and everyone who heard it wished they were in on the joke.
"Yo, Captain!"
Luke Shepherd called, catching sight of Toby and waving. I could feel everyone watching as we crossed the quad, Toby in his bow tie, Cassidy in her crown of braids, and me, with the sleeve of my black hoodie pulled low over my wrist brace, trying to look as though I needed my cane less than I actually did. Toby ushered us over to one of the better-placed tables in the upper quad, an 8-seater with a gray beach umbrella, half full of our year's resident eccentrics.
"Meet the rest of our school's illustrious debate team," he said, and for a moment, I thought he was joking.
There was Luke Shepherd, the president of the film club, with his hipster glasses and signature smirk. The year before, our whole school had followed this blog called Auto-Tune the Principal, and while Luke had never outright claimed credit, everyone knew it was him. Sitting next to Luke was Sam Mayfield, looking like he'd gotten lost on his way home from the country club. Sam smacked of future lawyer, and even though he was a junior, he'd been head of the campus Republicans for as long as I could remember. Across from Sam, drinking a can of Red Bull and playing some game on his iPad, was Austin Covelli, our school's resident graphic designer. Austin was the guy who whipped up the yearbook cover and designed the school sweatshirts. Back during sophomore year, he'd launched an online t-shirt store. Mostly, I'd been picturing Toby's friends as a bunch of obscure honor roll students, the sort who clubbed together out of social necessity and made it through high school largely unnoticed. Not these guys.
"Look who I found," Toby said gleefully.
Luke's jaw dropped. Sam let out an incredulous laugh.
"Well, well, if it isn't Cassidy Thorpe," Austin said, flicking his shaggy blonde hair out of his eyes without looking away from his game. "What the heck are you doing here?"
Cassidy smiled hugely.
"Waiting to graduate and move on with my life, same as y'all. Now, how come none of you ever mentioned that your school has a coffee cart?"
Cassidy slid onto the bench next to Toby, pulled out a packet of peanut butter crackers, and patted the seat next to her. It was the end of the bench, thank God, and I wondered if she'd left it for me on purpose, so I wouldn't have to ask anyone to shift down.
"Oh, right,"
Toby said a little too theatrically, pretending he'd only just remembered.
"You all know Faulkner."
"Hey," I said sheepishly, taking the proffered seat. I guess they'd thought I was just passing by, showing the new student around, but when I sat down, Luke gave Toby a significant look, as though my joining the table needed to be preceded by his approval. I put on my sunglasses and watched everyone pick at their food. Lunch starts at 11:30, which is ridiculous, on account of how some nearby food chains are still serving breakfast sandwiches. I hadn't brought anything, and I glanced toward the lunch line in the lower quad, which was an endless stretch of underclassmen.
"Quick, eat these."
Phoebe Chang slid a plastic container of grocery store cupcakes onto the table, her nose studs sparkling in the sunlight. There was a pink stripe in her hair that I didn't remember.
"I just swiped them from the front office. It's the school nurse's birthday."
She glanced over her shoulder, as though expecting to be apprehended at any moment, and Toby grabbed for one of the vanilla cupcakes.
50 points for irony if we get food poisoning," he said. "By the way, Phoebe, this is Cassidy, and you know Ezra."
Phoebe, who was still basking in the glory of her cupcake heist, glanced at me and nearly dropped her iced tea.
"Holy crap! I'm 5 minutes late and I missed the most historic lunch table switch in the annals of the upper quad."
"I thought you didn't do annals, Phoebs,"
Luke said with a wink. Phoebe picked up a cupcake, smashed the frosting down with her tongue, and offered it to Luke with an evil grin.
"I don't know about that. How about some sloppy seconds, Shepherd?"
Luke took the cupcake and bit into it with relish, antagonizing her. I wondered how long they'd been dating. Phoebe, who was not, in fact, a notorious cupcake thief, was actually the editor of the school paper.
"So, Ezra,"
Phoebe said, sliding onto the bench next to Luke,
"how's life as a teenage vampire?"
Toby snorted, and Cassidy snickered through a mouthful of cupcake.
"Oh, come on," Phoebe continued. "You're asking for it. Pale skin, black clothes, no lunch, and that whole brooding thing? It's hilarious. You should get some body glitter and go after an unsuspecting freshman."
"You should," Cassidy agreed. "Tell her you're a dangerous monster and mention how good her blood smells."
"Wrong time of the month on that one, and I'm getting slapped," I muttered, and everyone laughed.
"You're funny."
Phoebe passed me the last chocolate cupcake.
and I always thought your friends were laughing over their own farts.
90% of Eastwood's male population laughs over their own farts, Toby said. Present company excluded, naturally.
How many points would I lose if I farted right now? Luke asked with a chuckle.
Don't even think about it,
Phoebe warned, preemptively scooting away from him. I peeled the wrapper off my cupcake and glanced toward my old lunch table, where Charlotte had climbed onto Evan's lap. She was texting, her ponytail spilling over one shoulder. Evan's hand was on her thigh. Suddenly, she looked up and caught me staring. She nudged Evan, who glanced over as well, clearly wondering what I was doing at a different table. But it turned out they didn't really care, because half a moment later, they were sucking face.
Come on, new girl, Phoebe said, standing up. Let's go to the bathroom.
Once Phoebe and Cassidy had gone, Luke chuckled and shook his head.
Can someone please explain why my girlfriend is going to the bathroom with Cassidy Thorpe?
I know nothing about the intricacies of female pack behavior, said Sam. But I do know that we need to expand Friday's guest list.
Luke shot Sam a dark look.
Oh, sorry,
Sam muttered, glancing guiltily in my direction.
What the heck? Austin said. I thought she disappeared and now she's at Eastwood? It doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense? I asked.
Any of it.
Toby balled up his cupcake wrapper.
But then Cassidy always liked it that way. You know how I said she was unbeatable at debate?
That's not the half of it. She never seemed to try.
She'd show up to tournaments in blatant dress code violations, throw a picnic in an elevator, and not even bother to come to the awards ceremony. She competed for this really snotty prep school, which made it even stranger.
But she quit after winning the state quals last year. Gave up her spot at the state championship 4 days before the tournament, and the rumor was that she'd left school suddenly, just completely disappeared.
Did you ever find out why? I asked.
Like anyone can get a straight answer out of Cassidy?
Toby laughed.
Incoming,
Austin muttered, nodding toward Phoebe and Cassidy. Everyone turned to stare at them guiltily, but I was watching something entirely different, the spectacle of Charlotte and Evan, and their all-too-public face-sucking. When the girls rejoined us, Phoebe glanced at my uneaten cupcake before reaching across the table to pat my hand.
Don't worry, she teased. There's some nice O positive in the nurse's office if you're thirsty.
8. I don't know if you've ever been in line at the drugstore somewhere, and the person behind you is chewing gum directly in your ear, and it's so repulsive that you suspect they're doing it on purpose, and you're a complete pushover for standing there and taking it. There was something about Evan and Charlotte that made me feel exactly like that. Something so deeply and personally offensive about the two of them all over each other that I just couldn't handle it, even though the initial shock of it had originally fooled me into believing that I didn't care. So, I might as well admit that, deep down, I'd known what I was doing when I decided to eat lunch with Toby instead of sitting with my old crew. Over the course of the week, I went out of my way to avoid my old friends, as I'd done all summer, and they seemed baffled by it, and more than a little bit hurt. I couldn't figure out why they even cared. They couldn't really have thought I'd turn up for that game of paintball or that last-minute rafting trip or any of the other ridiculous things they'd texted me about. I mean, not one of them had even bothered to visit me in the hospital. Anyway, Evan and Charlotte were together now, had been together for what seemed suspiciously like a few months at least, and it was plain what that meant. In the grand scheme of seniors worth gawking at, they should have topped the list. But they didn't. Instead, I was the recipient of far too much attention for my liking. And when everyone wasn't whispering and staring at me, they were whispering and staring at Cassidy. Stories that the debate team had only hinted at spilled out into the school-wide rumor mill, that Cassidy had turned up at a debate tournament dressed as a boy, complete with an enormous fake mustache, and still won. That Cassidy had organized a flash mob where more than 100 strangers showed up at a graveyard in San Francisco dressed as zombies and had an enormous pillow fight. That you could purchase t-shirts with a pop art print of Cassidy's face on them from a Spanish fast fashion retailer. That she'd spent a summer modeling for teen book covers. In our tiny, nothing-ever-happens town, Cassidy was an oddity, and even though the stories might not have been true, they were more likely to have happened to her than to anyone else. She never let on that she knew about the rumors, though. And for all I knew, she didn't. Our lunch group had plenty to talk about without